Pas Joël du Welcome to this new cafe club. Today we have Erwan Ellis. Erwan is a postdoc at the physics laboratory at the École Normale Supérieure in Paris since 4 years. Before he did the PhD, the EAP, working on the interface between cosmology, theoretical physics, working on modified theories of gravity and topological defects of Chromy strings. So I suppose your supervisor was Patrick Peter, or someone close to him. Okay. You're welcome today with these 30 minutes to talk about recent results that he got moving from theoretical cosmology to something more related to data analysis. Yeah, 30 minutes, do not hesitate to interrupt everyone at any time or put the questions on the chat. Please, everyone.
Thank you. So, hello, everyone. Yes, as has been said, so please don't hesitate and interrupt me and ask questions. In addition, it's not that easy to do a seminar by Zoom, so when people interact, it can be easier to see if people are with me or not. So I will present recent results from scattering transform in astrophysics and cosmology. And so these are results that have been obtained in the three previous years in our little team at the Laboratoire de Physique de l'École Normale Supérieure. So that's results that have been done with François Boulanger, François Levrier. There is Bruno Regaldo-Saint-Blancard, a third year PhD student with working with us. And there is also Stéphane Mala, who actually is not a physicist, but a specialist of data science. He's professor at École Normale Supérieure Collège de France. And most of his work has been devised working in interaction with him. So we'll first begin with the motivation and a broad introduction. So, so the motivation is when we work with in astrophysics or in cosmology, we're working with a lot of very nonlinear dynamics. And when we work with nonlinear dynamics, we have a coupling between scales that will generate geometrical structures. As you can see, for instance, here these filamentary structures. And to try to model the here for instance the interstellar medium, we can use a different model or numerical simulation, but at the end, we need to make a statistical comparison, for instance, here between numerical simulation and observational data. And actually, to make this comparison is very difficult. It's a current challenge in astrophysics because due to the fact that we have nonlinear physics, the structures that form in the images, we need to deal with non-Gaussian statistics. And it's difficult to have tools to work with just statistics. So the main question is, what can we do to characterize these different processes, but also to compare them to separate components, and for instance, also to do inference of parameter or classification and so on. And the main idea is that we need to go beyond power spectrum because the power spectrum is not able to characterize the coupling between different scales. And here you have an example of two fields with exactly the same power spectrum. And basically what it means is that if you use the power spectrum to compare these fields, the power spectrum will say to you, both fields are exactly the same. So we know that we need to go beyond the power spectrum. It doesn't mean that the power spectrum is not good. Basically, that's maybe the first thing you will want to look at when you are trying to understand what is in a given process. But we need to go beyond that, okay? And at the moment, no generic method has really emerged to characterize Einstein and Gaussian field when you don't have any model. It doesn't mean that there are different way of characterizing these fields that can be very efficient in certain cases, but in general, and when you don't have any kind of model, it's very complicated. For instance, we know that there are higher order correlation functions like bispectrum, and basically if you have a field that is close to Gaussian and for which you can do a perturbative study, it's probably the best way to go. You will be able, in addition, to make the link with the equations that drives your field, so it's very nice. But if you don't have any model and if your field is very non-Gaussian, you will have a lot of terms, the variance can be high, it will be complicated to work with bispectrum, for instance. Recently, people work more and more with different machine learning tools like convolutional neural network. And actually, if you have a specific task that is very well defined and good quality data that you can use to train your network, for instance, for this task, is probably the best and the simpler way to go. But there are several problems. For example, you need good quality data to train your network. And if you don't have this data, it can be problematic. And also, the data should correspond to the kind of field on which you want to apply it at the end. And for instance, if you train on simulation and try to apply your network on observational data, you're not completely sure that it will work as you would expect it to work. For instance, at the end, you can have some small differences that the network will see, and you're not sure if the network isn't seeing just the difference between the simulated data and the observational data. Also, you have a very weak interpretability, which means that if you use a neural network, you don't know exactly what is at the last layer of the network. So if you want to try to interpret a little bit your result, it will be complicated. So the question we ask in our group for 3 years is, okay, can we try to take an alternative path and try to see if we can construct new statistical description from data science? And interacting with the team of Stéphane Allard, École Normale Supérieure, we took at end and we developed scattering-like methods. So there are no specific name to describe all these kind of methods. So we call them scattering lights. They are related to the wavelet scattering transform that I will quickly discuss, and the wavelet phase harmonic on which I will focus this talk. There are low-dimensional statistical description of non-Gaussian fields, and they are inspired from neural network construction, which means that actually Stéphane Malin and his collaborator try to understand why the neural network weren't working that good. So they try to identify which kind of operation were really necessary to recover and to characterize non-Gaussian fields. And from that, they introduce non-Gaussian statistics that were a little bit like neural network, but that do not need any training speech, which means that this kind of statistical description, wavelet scattering transform, wavelet phase harmonic, you can use them as summary statistics. You don't need any training stage to apply them, okay? And the basis of this statistic are the following one. You first have a separation of the process that you are studying at different scales using the wavelet transform, and I will explain it just after. But then you need to introduce a very important step, which is introduce non-linearities to couple different scales. And that's what is very new in this scattering line method. The fact to use pointwise non-linearities like scattering or correlation, non-linearities are not exactly the correlation I will show, but to use scattering or correlation with phase harmonic to couple different scales, okay? And that's why we would have using this technique different results than using only the wavelet transform. Just a brief reminding on wavelets. So wavelets are localized wave packets, okay, that probably given the spectral domain. Here it's a bump steerable wavelet, but the exact wavelet is not very important. So you see that's a localized wave packet. Here it's the real part of a complex wavelet. And if you consider its Fourier transform, you see just which here is real, you just have a Fourier transform that is sampling a particular area in the Fourier space, okay? And what you can do is that from a given mother wavelet, you can call it that way, you can use dilation and rotation to generate a whole set of wavelets. For example, if you make a rotation of this wavelet, the location of its Fourier transform will rotate in the Fourier plane. And if you make a dilation of the wavelet, the location of the Fourier transform of the wavelet will be dilated and translated in the Fourier plane. And at the end, you will have a set of wavelets that will be able to sample the whole Fourier plane. And to keep things simple, we will label the wavelet by just a single K wave number, which is a characteristic wave number of the wavelet. So for instance, it will be the central wave number of the Fourier transform of the wavelet. And why are wavelets useful to look at a process and try to decompose it in a different scale? Because when you will make a convolution between a given field and a wavelet, okay, if you go in Fourier, you will just have a product between the Fourier transform of the field and the Fourier transform of the wavelet. So at the end, we'll just be bound passing, okay, the process you are looking at in a given bound, okay, at the characteristic scale that is probed by the wavelet. And to give you a little illustration of that, here you have a matter density field from the large scale structure, and here you have, I will do it like that, you have the Fourier transform of a wavelet, okay? you have here three convolution with wavelet at different scale but same orientation. So you have to translate and dilate a little bit the Fourier transform here. And you have two columns. This is the amplitude of the convolution and the phase of the oscillation. Here you are probing, let's say, 8 pixels, let's say 16 pixels, and let's say 32 pixels. What you have here is the amplitude is the local level of oscillation at the characteristic scale probed by the wavelet, and here's the local phase of the oscillation at the characteristic scale probed by the wavelet. And you recover a pattern here, which is that, for instance, here you see that there is a main frequency of the main wavelength of oscillation, which is, let's say, 16 pixels, and it's related to the fact that we are probing what happens. It is immediate 16 pixels. But you see that you have also a random phase, which is actually related to the particular location of the different filamentary structure here. And that's and for instance, to consider the alignment between these different phase information, it's the kind of things that we want to consider. So, okay. So here I already show that. And if I come back to the cosmological density field here, you see you can convolve it with wavelet probing different scales, and at each time you have amplitude and phase. Okay, and the point is, if you want to couple scales without using nonlinearities, it will be very complicated. You can make a convolution with a second scale, but basically, as you have been doing a bandpass here at a given scale, if you try to bandpass it at another scale, you already lost the information that were in the image at this larger scale. Okay, you can try to do a correlation between both images. Will be a covariance, and here it will just be a pixel by pixel product because these fields have zero mean. But if you do that, you will have something that is very close to zero, because basically here you have something that oscillates, let's say, at 16 and 32 pixels, and doing a covariance is like integrating cos x cos 2x, you will have zero. So you need nonlinearities to efficiently couple scales, and that's what is included in the scattering like method. So just one slide to say to you that there is already the wavelet scattering transform that has been developed for 10 years by Stefan Mala. So it's related to amplitude modulation of the first scale by a second scale. So I won't enter into the details, but just to let you know, so there have been already several applications in astrophysics. For example, as a reduction of, in the first paper that we published in 2019, we showed that it was possible for physical field to reduce and interpret the wavelet scattering transform description. It has been applied, for instance, for classification of image dissimulation. It's by Andrew Tajari, who is a PhD student at Harvard University. And for instance, it shows that with our reduction, we were able to go from 1,800 coefficient to something like 160, yeah. And so dividing by 10 the number of coefficients, and have a classification success that goes from 50 to 84. So that was a very nice result. There has also been some result in estimation of cosmological parameter from large-scale structure simulation from Xiao Sheng, who is a PhD student in the team of Brice Ménard at John Hopkins University, where they show that they were able to have results similar to what neural networks are able to have. And it was also the case for the MHD simulation. And also in our team with Bruno Regalo-Samblanca, the PhD student in our team, we generalized this kind of description to polarize Q and U emission, taking into account the joint statistics between Q and U fields. Now, let me present the wavelet phase harmonic. So it has been developed in data science for 2 years. And here, the kind of information that we want to characterize is the phase alignment between different scales that we know is very important, for example, when you want to describe filamentary structures. And for that, the phase harmonic nonlinearities have been introduced. So let's come back to the image I already showed. So you have a field, the density field, that is filtered at 2 different scales. Here you have the phase, which is a mean oscillation at, let's say, 16 pixels, 32 pixels, plus a random phase, which is related to the particular position of the filamentary structure in the field. Here. If you don't use any nonlinearities, you cannot succeed to couple the scales, because basically you have fields that oscillate at different frequencies. What you can do is to introduce the phase harmonic nonlinearities. What does it do? You keep the same amplitude, so I didn't put it again, but you take the phase and you multiply it here by 2. Okay? If you do that, the characteristic scale of oscillation is 16 pixels, not anymore 32 pixels. But the particular position of the random phase, in addition to this mean oscillation, is related to the particular position of the structures in the images here at 32 pixels, which means that when we compute a correlation here between both fields, you will have something that can be non-vanishing and that is able to characterize the phase alignment, the local phase alignment between different Fourier modes, if you want. And for instance, you can show that if you are looking at a stationary Gaussian field for which you don't have any coupling between scales, okay, you will have zero. And otherwise, you can have something that is positive and negative if the different scales have a tendency to be aligned or anti-aligned. Okay, we can write it on a mathematical way, but you will see it's very simple. You have a field, you can convolve it by a wavelet that is probing a given wave number k. Okay, we can compute covariance, so just covariance of the field bound pass at a given k1 wave number and k2 wave number, and you can show that it's vanishing if k1 different from k2 because you have filtered map at different frequencies. Okay, actually, when k1 equals k2, you can show that the information that you recover can be expressed entirely in terms of the power spectrum, and so that we already. Like that, you need non-linearities. So the non-linearities you introduce is a phase harmonic. Okay, so we take a complex number z, okay, modulus phase, and its p phase harmonic. It's labeled with bracket p, and it's just the same modulus, but you multiply the phase by p. Okay, actually, it's related to what has been done, for instance, in speech recognition, or if you want to understand some notes of music. So when you have a note, the particular sound of this note is related to the different harmonics and the different phase between the harmonics. But actually, the notion of phase between different frequencies is not very well defined. And to try to understand what is the relative phase between different harmonics, what you can do is just move one harmonic to another in terms of frequency using the phase harmonic. And then you can define a notion of phase because you have two processes, two signals at the same frequencies. And you will be able to define a notion of phase and see all the different harmonics are related in terms of phase. And that's exactly what we do here in terms of spatial frequencies. Okay? So if you have rho convoluted by phi k1, you have the k1 spatial frequency. You take harmonic p, okay, you have the p times k1 spatial frequency. And for example, you can have non-vanishing covariance term like this one, k1 over 2 phase harmonic 2, k1. And if you compute this covariance, you will characterize the statistics of relative phase shift between the two wavelength bounds, the two frequencies. Okay. And at the end, you can construct a set of WPH statistics, which are constructed by WPH moment. For each moment, you choose two different scales and the way you couple them. So indeed, you have the phase harmonic as the one I showed to you, but for instance, you can just take k equals zero, and it will include the correlation between the local level of amplitude, the local amplitude of the oscillation, sorry, at different scales, okay? So from that, you choose a set of WPH moment, and you have a set of, you have WPH statistics, okay? So first thing we did to try to see what we can do with that was to do an estimation of cosmological parameter from the density field, the matter density field of the large scale structure. For that, we use the Kirote simulation that has been developed at the Flatiron Institute in New York. So they are n-body simulation of the large scale structure. We worked with projected slices of matter density at z equals zero. Okay, and in this simulation, we can have varying cosmological parameters like omega matter, omega baryon, H, NS, and sigma 8. Here you have three examples of such density fields with varying cosmological parameters. The variations are much larger than the constraint we can have on the cosmological parameters, the current constraint, but it's just to give an example on how the filamentary structure, the texture of the cosmic web is modified when you modify the cosmological parameter. And here you have exactly what we saw at the beginning. I mean, basically the power spectrum can be not that different, but in terms of structures, you see that the structuration, the texturation of the cosmic web is very different. So what we did was to compute Fisher estimate. I won't enter the details, but to compute Fisher estimate from this kind of map. And we compare WPH statistic with 327 coefficient, power spectrum with 127, and power spectrum plus bispectrum, 313. And doing that, we showed that we were able to have better constraints than power spectrum plus bispectrum with the WPH statistic. So here, to give you an example, is you have the figure of merit that you can have from the Fisher constraint from the logarithm of the matter density field. So in red, you have the power spectrum, okay? In blue, you have the power spectrum plus bispectrum. Here, it's more in violet. And green, but we became with some kind of maroon, you have the wavelet phase harmonic. And you see that for all these five coefficients, the wavelet fisharmonic is about to have similar or better result in terms of constraints of the cosmological parameter than the power spectrum plus backspectrum. So that was some kind of standard application, and I will now present new kind of applications that we were able to have and new results that we were able to have with these statistics. So for that purpose, we introduced the concept of statistical synthesis. What does it mean? So the first question that we asked ourselves was, okay, we are able to do nice constraints, but what kind of information are the WPS statistics actually characterizing? For example, how does it relate to Minkowski functional, standard deviation of the power spectrum, or things like that? And for that, we introduced the concept of statistical synthesis from maximum entropy model. So I won't enter into detail because I'm already a little bit late. But let's say if you see different simulation of the density field at the stochastic process, you can say, okay, what I can do is to model this process with my WB statistics. So to say, from my WB statistic, I will generate new realization of the process I am studying, okay? And you can do that following a maximum entropy principle, which means that you won't give any other explicit or implicit information than the one that is contained in the WB statistics. So to do that, we follow the microcanonical approach. So let's say you have a given set of realization rho bar from which you can learn your statistics. Here, WB statistics. So they are contained in a five vector, okay? So what you can say is to say, okay, we consider as possible all the realizations that have the same statistics up to epsilon and give them equal probability. Going just in the practical way, what you can do is just to start from a white noise, a Gaussian white noise, okay? And then you do a gradient descent in pixel space to obtain at the end a field that has the same statistics in terms of WP statistics that your initial field, okay? So here, it's, without trying to optimize your statistics, that's an example of what we had. It was a result given in the paper of the presentation of the Kirote simulation. So you have one original field, one statistics from the WP statistics with phase harmonic covariance, and one synthesis just with power spectrum. And actually it was interesting because without any optimization already of the statistic, we already saw that basically from one image, we were able to have very nice reproduction of the Fermi structure, of the large scale structure. But we tried to validate it quantitatively. So for that purpose, we applied to the logarithm of the maternosity field. We consider similar WBH statistics than the one we use for cosmological inference. Just we consider explicitly all the direction. Because for the inference, we had made some integration of the direction. And we introduced between 5 and 10 k moments. And what we did was to consider a quantitative validation of this synthesis. So we start from 30 initial maps. Okay, we compute statistics from this map. Then we generated 300 statistical syntheses from these statistics, and we compare using standard summary statistics of cosmology the statistics of these 300 syntheses with the statistics of 300 other simulation of the large scale structure. Okay, other realization, but it was the same kind of simulation. So here you have an example of synthesis, so original and synthetic. So already you see that we were able to reproduce the structure. We look, for instance, to the power spectrum and the standard deviation of the empirical estimator of the power spectrum. In orange, you have the simulation. In blue dashed line, you have the synthesis. So you see that we were able to reproduce the power spectrum and its standard deviation. We also look at the pixel probability distribution function.
I'm sorry. Can you just go back to what you call a synthesis? So here, the synthesis, you produce it without running a simulation from?
No, it just, we take the statistics that we have, so WB statistics,
yeah.
And from the statistics, we're able to generate new realizations that have the same statistics. And the idea is that if the statistic describes sufficiently well your process, basically, if you do that, you recover the same kind of things. And to give you an example, actually, we know that following this procedure, if we introduce only the power spectrum as a constraint, as an initial information, following a maximum entropy principle, we will recover just a Gaussian random field. And that's clearly what you have if you try to do this synthesis from this initial image, but constraining only the power spectrum.
So here, for example, in the middle, the first, the original picture and the second picture, they have the same wavelet harmonic covariance.
Exactly.
But they're not the same.
Sorry?
They are not the same.
No.
Global, but they have the same.
Exactly. Okay. So that's why we call it statistical synthesis. We will be able to generate new fields that have the same statistics. But it's not some compression and that's just a new field, a new realization that has the same statistics.
Okay, thank you.
And that's what I showed. We tried to verify that the statistics, the summary statistic of the synthesis was actually the same as the one of the initial field. Any other question? So here what we say is that the synthesis reproduces the power spectrum, the standard deviation of the empirical power spectrum. Here, for instance, we reproduce a pixel probability distribution function. The same in log space, and it's nice because we are able to recover the tails up to 6th order of magnitude, while the generative adversarial network generally stop at 3 order of magnitude. And we verified also it for bispectrum, Minkowski functional, empirical power spectrum correlation and distribution. And it means that we were able to reproduce all these statistics. So it's, in broad word, it means that the WPH statistics we introduced in this work are more or less comprehensive because they constrain intrinsically most of the usual statistics used in cosmology. And it opens the path to new application. And if I can finish in 5 minutes, I will show you the example of application. But to illustrate that, here it's an example of with the optimized WPH statistics that have been developed in this paper. That's an example of observational data from the interstellar medium. It's a H alpha observation from Hubble of the Orion bar. So here you have the ionized region. Here you have the neutral atomic and neutral molecular region, the molecular cloud. And here you have the ionized from. And what you see is that just starting from this image, it's a test that we did with Olivier Bernet and Claire Guillotot, we were able to generate new realization, new statistical realization of this initial image. So that's not the same, but they have the same statistical property. And it was nice because basically you see that we are able to recover the ionized region, the neutral region. And actually you have some kind of ionized front, but that I put randomly because you don't know, the synthesis doesn't know exactly where to put this front, but you have some kind of front that are reproduced here. But here, to be clear, to have these images, I start from this image, I compute WPH statistics, a few K coefficients, and from this statistic, I can generate as much statistical synthesis as I want. And here you have 3 examples of such synthesis. So, and last application, what we did was to try to ask ourselves, are we able to make some kind of denoising or separation of components using this? And for that, let's say you work with observational noisy data. So D is the noisy data, S is the noisy data you want to recover, and N is the noise, okay? Indeed, you don't know the exact realization of the noise, but basically you can, for instance, have a good characterization of the noise from a statistical point of view. And I say, for example, that you can have a lot of mock realization of the noise. In our paper, we consider typical Planck noise, instrumental Planck noise, and we took 300 noises. Okay, then you can synthesize a new map S such that the statistic of the denoise map are, when you add a noise, equal to the statistics of the noise initial data, but you want it to be true for all the noise realizations that you want to ensure some kind of statistical independence between this map and the noise realization. And when you do that, you can just make a synthesis, and then the S bar map will be the denoise map. And the first thing we did was to validate that on simulation. So we took a map of Q and U stocks polarization variable obtained from MHD simulation, and we introduced a realistic Planck noise at 353 GHz. And here you have the noisy map, okay? The denoise map that we obtained, and here that's the truth map that's for Q, the Q stock parameter. And basically what we show, what we obtain is that we were able to denoise the map about 1 order of magnitude below the noise. Here you have the same color scales, okay? So you see that all the noise have been removed. So indeed we are not able to recover the smaller features, but already we are able to very efficiently remove the noise from this map.
Erwan, excuse me, did you do exactly the same thing on the true data?
I will show it in 4 slides.
Okay.
But yes, that's what we had in mind. Indeed. So here it's for the validation, because for the true data, we don't have the,
the true data, and we just have the noisy data. So here we did that on simulation to compare the result that we got with the true data, and then we applied it on simulation. So to give you an example, there are power spectrums, so there are a lot of curves. We will just look at the orange one here is the data we want to have, the signal of interest. The blue is the noisy signal, so you see you have a flat power spectrum at the IK small scales. And the green is the power spectrum of the denoised image, okay? And basically you see that we're able to recover the power spectrum one order of magnitude below the noise. Here you have an example of the histogram of the increment for Q. So I won't enter into details, you compute the increment for a given lag, the isotropic increment, difference between 2 points separated by a given lag, and you can have a histogram of this increment for the lag. That's typically summary statistics that are used to study interstellar intermittency of the interstellar medium. And in blue, you have the noisy data. In orange, you have the truth. And in green, you have the denoise, which means that already with a very high level of noise, we were able to more or less recover the histogram of the increment. And also, to say to you, here it's the initial noise, so the one we didn't have, indeed, when we did the denoise. And here you have the reconstructed noise, the one that when you take the initial noisy map and you remove the denoise map. And what is very nice here is that you see that actually we didn't do only a denoising. What we did was rather a statistical separation of components. We were able to separate up to a certain level the noise and the image of interest, which is very nice because basically it means that using this kind of synthesis, if we have a sum of two components, one of which we know statistically, we are able, up to a certain precision, to separate this component. So just to conclude, here you have the example that we did at for Planck chameleon Muscat observation at 353 GHz in polarization. So to the left, noisy data, in the middle, denoise data, in the right, genuine, so that has been produced by the Planck map to have some kind of comparison to this peak of the arc. So let me zoom a little bit. So here you see you have a noisy map, and basically we are able up to a certain level to what we estimate around one order of magnitude below the noise to reduce the noise. So you see we reproduce the kind of structure that appear, and basically with eyes we see that we are quite efficient at retrieving the noise but keeping the structure of interest. And to give you a comparison, here you have genil, which is just mainly obtained by filtering, so removing the scale where you have a lot of noise. So we see that we are able to recover much more details. Okay, and to give you an example, here you have the PDF of the increment for noisy data, our denoised data, and genil. And basically, we were able on simulation to more or less reproduce an entire PDF of increment for higher level of noise, which means that we can have quite a good confidence in this kind of figure of merit. So I'm a little bit late, sorry, let me conclude. So. Here I gave a talk more in terms of methodology, but indeed there is a link with the astrophysical scientific objective. But so I introduced scattering transform and related techniques. So there are new statistics from data science that allow to characterize coupling between different scales. You don't need it in training, and these statistics are more or less interpretable. You have some idea of what the statistics describe, coupling of two scales in terms of phase alignment, coupling of two given scales in terms of local level of oscillation, and so on. And there are a wide range of applications, characterization and comparison, classification and parameter inference, statistical synthesis directly for observation, and denoising and component separation. And what was very nice is that in a lot of these applications, we were able to reach state-of-the-art result in comparison to deep neural network, for instance. So, and I will stop there. Sorry to be late, and thanks for your attention.
Thank you, everyone. Very nice talk. Is there any question? Please feel free to open your mic. Wait, Nico, please.
Yeah, pretty cool stuff. Thanks. I had a question on the synthesis part. I'm not sure to have followed you. So in order to make new statistical realization of the large scale structure, you first have to train your statistics on the Kihot simulations. Did I understand this well?
So you can use the word train, or you can just we compute the statistic from the Kihot simulation. And that's what we do when we do statistical synthesis. We take an image, we compute statistic from this image, as we could compute power spectrum or bispectrum. Here we compute wavelet phase harmonic statistics. And then from these statistics, this set of statistics, 5K coefficient, we can generate statistical synthesis, which is start from a Gaussian white noise, let's say, and you make a gradient descent in pixel space, and the loss is, actually it's not a good slide, the loss is exactly that, statistics of your image, you are gradient descending, let's say, and statistics of the image that you consider at the beginning.
Okay, so it's very similar to the GAN generation that were introduced, except that you know your filters that you are applying.
I wouldn't say that very similar. So indeed, we have some generative model. So the spirit and the idea is the same. But the idea, one different feature is here, we don't need any training of the representation of the statistical description we use. And we don't need any training for the generative process. While basically the GAN, you will need a lot of images and it will train simultaneously the way to characterize the statistic of your images, let's say, and you learn the way it generates the images. Okay? Here, I mean, we have statistics that for example, what we call optimized set of WB statistics from the large scale structure. But already, if you have one image here of ESM of international data, you don't need anything more than just one image, and you can generate new synthesis. So the training part is reduced to just to compute the statistics.
Okay.
In this case, that I say you don't need any training. You compute statistics from a map, indeed, because at some point you need some information, but you just need one map to compute statistics, and from that, you don't train the statistical description and you don't train the generative process. All is given and already working.
And can you consider that these new generated fields are statistically independent? I mean, in the sense of using them for computing a covariance matrix, for instance?
All these fields, at each time you would start from a different Gaussian white noise and you do a pixel gradient descent. So in terms of statistical independence, they are completely independent. They are IID independent and identically distributed realization of the process.
Okay, thanks. Well, I have other questions, but maybe I let other people ask first.
I see three people asking for questions. Guylaine, please.
Nice talk.
You can also open your webcam.
Yes, sorry, but I have my hand with water because I'm cooking at the same time. I'm very sorry, but so I cannot put my video with my hand with water. I didn't follow all about the method, but of course on the result, yeah, you put that because you expect me to ask this question, I imagine. What about removing the CIB from the galaxy at a high latitude rather than just removing the noise?
So yeah, first I'm sorry because when I began my presentation, I understood that I tried to put too much material on it. And basically I went a little bit I went too fast and I'm sorry, so maybe I should have done less material, whatever. So indeed, the first thing we thought about when we devised these kind of things was to try to separate the CIB and the foreground emission from the galaxy. At the end, we went on polarized foreground, and so it was noisy data, and the denoising was natural because it was in the ANR of François Boulanger. But the first idea we had was to separate CIB from galactic foreground in intensity, and actually that's something that we want to focus on at the moment, and we just took M2 student. That will probably continue in a PhD, we hope. And that's something that we want to do. And to do that, the nice thing would be to have a very precise statistical characterization of the CIB. Because if you want to make a statistical separation of components, as I said, you have two components, and if you want to separate them, the first thing that you can do is that if you know very well one of the components statistically, we will be able to deterministically separate the image. That's what we did here because we have a very nice statistical characterization of the noise with Planck. So that's something that we clearly want to do and that we have in mind. And if you are interested to talk about that, we are very interested to discuss that with you. We don't hear you, I'm sorry.
Sorry. And you have a cool simulation. We have a 100 square degree simulation of CIB that you could use to characterize the statistics.
Yeah, probably it will be.
Because you need to, you need an input model to characterize that. Yeah.
Exactly.
So yeah. That's, yeah. We have to discuss that for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
I see another question by Guillaume. Please, Guillaume.
Yes. Yes, thank you very much for your nice talk. Yeah, I have a question about Minkowski functional. Maybe you can say a bit more about them and about the interpretation that you can maybe get with your new approach of the Minkowski functional. Because for example, it's possible to compute the Minkowski functional of a Poisson process, but at my knowledge, it's really difficult to have a clue or to understand Minkowski functional of a complex process like the universe. So maybe you can have something more with your approach.
To be clear, I'm not at all a specialist of Minkowski functional. We use them to validate the quality of our synthesis from a statistical point of view, which means that we generate synthesis and then we compute summary statistics from this synthesis and from the initial simulation. And so we try to be as exhaustive as possible with the statistic we use. And for that, we introduced B-spectrum, but also Minkowski functional. So we checked the Minkowski functional, but we didn't investigate the link between our kind of statistics and the Minkowski functional. Basically, the statement I can say is that the information that is characterized by the Minkowski functional is mostly contained in the information we characterize with the Minkowski statistics. But more than that, and to be clear, this statement is obtained from the fact that generating statistical synthesis, we reproduce the Minkowski functional. So it's very direct. But I don't have any more to provide you in terms of interpretation of the Minkowski functional at the moment. And we didn't focus on that. I'm sorry. But I don't think.
Yeah, and you test this comparison with the other statistics, including Minkowski functionals, using which kind of data set? So which level of no Gaussianity?
So that has been done for this field.
Okay, for the logarithm
from the large scale structure, the Kerote simulation, and using this kind of, exactly this kind of thing.
Do you expect the same efficiency looking at the processes on much smaller scales? So you've shown a picture of the Orion Nebula, something like that. Do you expect the same efficiency?
It's not clear for me what you call much smaller scales, because here you have a lot of
the level of
very small scales, because to obtain the alignment of the filaments, to obtain the smooth structure that you have between filaments, you need to constrain also the smaller scales of the image close to the pixel. And that's what we studied here also. So I think that here we are constraining the scale of the image. I don't know if you speak in terms of physical space or related to pixel size scales.
Oh, I mean that of course this picture is not highly non-Gaussian, but because of the large length scale, on average it might look as almost homogeneous and isotropic. So not strongly deviating from Gaussianity. While if you focus on very small patches on this image, you are characterized by a single filament, not by a network of filaments.
Okay.
So you cannot average out all the filaments. So I expect that, for instance, in this case, the Minkowski functional is not very different from a Gaussian process, while looking at the same Minkowski functional on a small patch of the sky, so all the statistics I mentioned yours, they are definitely different from.
Okay, so I will try to...
So,
I won't focus on the Minkowski functional, but I will try to give
Okay, or whatever statistics you want.
So the idea is here, so you have, when you study processes, you have what is called integral space scales, which is a scale on which you don't have, below which you don't have any more interaction between scales. And actually, it's related to the inhomogeneity of the statistics in your image, because basically here your statistics are more or less homogeneous at let's say 100, 200 megapixel scales. And if you look images like this one, it's not the case anymore at all, because you have a lot of inhomogeneity of the statistical properties. Here you see you have something with a lot of details at small scale, and here you don't have energy at all at small scale. So first, let me say that in our statistics, we coupled a lot of scales. We coupled scales that are close to each other and scales that are quite different to each other, 2 pixels with 64 pixels and so on, which means that our statistics already contain this kind of non-stationarity, non-homogeneity of the statistics on larger scale. Because for instance, we know that you have an oscillation of large scale. When you don't have some energy at large scale, you have all the, what happens at all the smaller scales that will be modified. And actually, you can see already that we are able to take out this kind of inhomogeneity, because if I zoom in the image here, so that's the initial observation image of the Orion bar, here you have in the, so it's in H alpha, so basically we see the ionized region, okay? And when you have energy at large scale in the image, you have also a lot of energy at smaller scale, okay? And when you don't have energy at large scale, you don't have energy at smaller scale, it's more or less smooth, okay? And you see that we already are able to reproduce it here. Because if you look where you have the ionized, the so-called ionized region, okay, you have a lot of energy at small scales. But in the so-called neutral region, the synthesis is able, more or less able to reproduce the fact that here you expect the field to be smooth. And that's something that you can show also so here and or here. So to a certain limit, we already are able to take into account this kind of non-homogeneity by considering also the coupling between the very small scale and the very large scale. And what we saw in our studies is that it was something that was very, very important to recover this. And to give you another example, if you go here, so you have features at large scale, here you recover basically the scanning strategy of the Planck satellite, okay? You have like a Gaussian white noise, but with different level of noise depending on the scanning strategy. And for instance, at the bottom right of the picture, you have just a region of the sky where Planck went a lot, okay? So you have a noise which is very small. But you see, you have very sharp features here which are related to the transition, and you have a non-homogeneity of these statistics because you have a huge modification of the statistical properties. And when you look at the denoised, so sorry, it's a reconstructive noise, okay, because it's pointless to show the title, but you see we are able to retrieve this particular feature. So up to a certain limit, we are able to recover this kind of inhomogeneity in the statistical property of the image. And we believe that it is related to the fact that we couple a lot of scale together, and to recover this homogeneity, you have to keep as an information the coupling between the very large scale and the very small scale. Does it answer to your question, more or less?
Yeah, and eventually we can continue later. I'd like to ask Mathilde, has a question.
Yes, thank you for your nice talk. So as you said, your reconstruction work for a Gaussian noise, and I was wondering if it would work and if you tried with a slightly non-Gaussian noise too.
So what we believe, and that we are currently investigating, is that basically if you have two processes that are very different in terms of structures, in terms of statistics, even if one of them, if both of them are not non-Gaussian, probably that we should be able to separate them up to a certain level. I mean, if one of the processes is very dominant on a certain scale, we won't be able to recover it. And we saw that the limit here for the denoising was something that one process when one was one order of magnitude be above the other. But we believe that if the texture, if the statistical properties of the two processes are different in terms of signature of coupling between scale and so on, we should be able, up to a certain level, indeed, to separate them. And here we have a Gaussian white noise, per part, but it's because we work in with this kind of noise and we apply it to denoising, but we believe it's kind of general. And to give you an example, here I have an example of the reconstructed noise that we already discussed. And you see, okay, it's a Gaussian white noise per part, but already it has some particular features related to the scanning strategy and so on. And we are more or less able to recover these features. So the answer would be, if the statistics are different, we believe we could be up to a certain level to separate them.
Okay, thank you very much.
I see that there are already other questions, but maybe since we are largely running out of time, maybe we can stop here, Erwan, and thank you again. And eventually, I let the room open for people interested in continuing the discussion. So thank you again. Just an announcement, the next week the speaker just sent me an email saying that she is busy, so the next week will not have any cafe club for now scheduled. So see you next week, and I stay with you on this room. Bye bye to everybody.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Nico may not be.
Yeah, I'm going to stay to chat a little bit with Erwan. Can you also stop the registering, maybe?
Yes. Yeah, sure. Yes. Guillaume?